what is easy for you. Do not do what is difficult, because you're going to compete with others who it's easy for. What's easy for you, you'll be a success.
That was Patricia Field. This is Marnie Salop. Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise and story. So I am really looking forward to connecting you with my next guest. You may know her from her trend-setting style, her iconic New York City retail shop, her famous red hair, or her recent gallery pop-up at Art Basel in Miami. Today, I sync up with my longtime friend, Oscar-nominated, Emmy Award-winning stylist, the eponymous fashion designer and retail entrepreneur, Patricia Field. Her style savoir-faire has graced the screens of Sex in the City, Devil Wears Prada, Ugly Betty, and most recently, the hit TV Land series, Younger. Pat shares her story on where it all began. She offers listeners some sage career advice and shares for the first time on any interview her wellness rituals and beauty secrets. But before we get started, today's episode is fueled by SumPotion. I am such a huge fan of their super high-quality tonic herbs, mushrooms, and superfoods. I started using these transformational foods and supplements around 2 years ago, and they have been serious game changers for my health, my energy levels, and even my sleep. Typically, I alternate between their Yin Power Potion and ashwagandha for all things balance, cordyceps if I'm feeling low energy and want to boost my workout, or chaga when my immune system is feeling taxed. I simply add it to my morning coffee or smoothie, and I'm on the move. SumPotion offers a variety of rejuvenating, restorative, and healing organic supplements and transformational foods. Head over to their website, sumpotion.com, and see for yourself. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Marnie on the Move on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Android. And of course, you can go to our website at marnieonthemove.com. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter, because we have some exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. My first memory of you is when you had your store on 8th Street and my father's retail store was up the street.
So we have that in common.
Yes.
Which, when you have something in common with someone, it's like you speak the same or a similar language.
Yes.
The communication, nothing has to be established. It's already established. Before I started my career, I came from somewhere, and my cabbage patch was quite fertile. So I was quite fortunate. I came from an entrepreneurial family, going back to my grandfather, and then the generation before me, my uncles, my mom, everybody was, they were here. They came from Greece at, you know, different ages, because there were 10 of them, aunts, uncles, my mom. And their father was an entrepreneur in Greece, and they learned it from him. And when they came here, you know, they had to make a living, and they interpreted it as, oh, I'm going to make a business.
Right.
Not I'm going to go get a job. So that's how I grew up, including my mother, who was a woman really ahead of her time. So when it was my time and I finished college and it was career time, I studied liberal arts. I didn't see anything. I loved what I studied because it was really interesting. You know, philosophy, government. I mean, I liked my studies. I hadn't studied those things before. But there was nothing I really wanted to do with all of this information specifically attached to a career.
Right.
And I was like, what am I going to do? So I like kind of hung around a little bit for a few months. But I had worked before during the summer when I was going to college. I got a job. I got my money, took the money, went to Europe my second summer in college.
Where'd you go to college?
NYU.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool.
So, you know, I was ambitious, but I learned to be ambitious from an ambitious family.
Right.
That was normal for me.
Right.
I never saw myself like in a corporate situation in one of these jobs. So when I finished college, I hung around for a few months or so. And then I saw this classified ad for a department store, a manager of a department. And it was this discount department store back in the day. It would be today's equivalent would be Century 21.
Mm-hmm.
It was this discounted place.
It was, what was it called?
It was called Alexander's. It was like Lohman's.
Uh-huh.
Actually, they were located in the Bronx, very near each other. And then they grew and they had a store on 59th Street.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, near Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, I was long gone from them at that point. But anyway, I looked at the ad. I said, I could do this. This is easy. I used to have little shops outside my family's home in Whitestone, you know, set up things and sell and whatever. I'm like, this is easy for me. And I tell, this is one thing, if for nothing else, career-wise to people, do what is easy for you. Do not do what is difficult, because you're going to compete with others who it's easy for. I would never be able to compete with a concert violinist. I don't know how to play the violin.
Right. That's such good advice.
Yes. What's easy for you, you'll be a success. But you have to know what's easy. You have to develop the consciousness of yourself.
Which could take years.
It depends on how much attention you give it. You're not just floating around here, you know what I mean? You have a life. You want to make that life rewarding and happy. That's your responsibility. Otherwise, what do you have? You go to a job and you hate the job and you don't, you 9-to-5 it. And that is your life. That is not, you don't put your hands in, you know, the control of others, but you have to pay attention to yourself. And part of it is also, if you're not lucky enough to get it from your family, develop confidence in yourself.
And cultivate that part of yourself.
Yes. Have the confidence that you know what you like, what you're good at, and you have the confidence to go do it. Go do it.
So when you were younger,
so
you
that's
liked
what
selling,
happened to me.
Yeah, so you liked selling clothing and you liked setting up the shops.
For me, fashion was easy.
Yeah.
That was point one. Because from a kid, I was always like, you know, it was easy. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a fashionista or I wear ballerina dresses. It was just easy. I had my own taste, my own style as a kid. That was point one. The second point is I grew up in family business. You know, I used to help my mom. She was in the dry cleaning business. She had 5-6 stores. In the summer, her staff, they would go on vacation. I was 13, 14 years old. I would go open up the store, take the clothes in.
Right.
Receive the clothes back, clean, get it organized. I used to check the inventory. I used to even check on the people that were working for my mother to see that, you know, there wasn't any hanky-panky going on. But anyway, that was my
experience. That was your normal.
That was my normal.
Yeah.
I knew business.
Right.
And I knew fashion. So when I saw this ad, I was like, I could do this. It's easy.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I got the job and I did very well. In the course of 3 years, I worked for 2 companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the retail end.
Right.
The market, you know, the whole business. And then after 3 years, I was like 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I opened up my own store.
Oh.
Yeah. I had a very small, like, inheritance from, because my dad passed away when I was 7. And so there was a little trust, very small trust fund. that by the time I was like 23 became $4,000. And I know we laugh at it today. And then I had a partner who was also my girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And she came from a family who had some money. So she brought her four and I brought my four and we opened up this business together in 1966.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
And then I remember your 8th Street store. That's not your 8th Street store. Your 8th Street store was your second store.
1971.
That was the year I was born.
I was 71.
It was serendipitous that we became friends.
That's true. Well, my first store was on Washington Place. I told you I went to NYU.
Yes.
So I knew the lay of the land. So when I went to open up the store, I had to find something that I could afford, but I knew that I could get customers.
Right.
And, you know, it was, you know, on the street and the buildings, the school buildings, Washington Square College, the main building, the whatever. And, you know, it's the kids passing by that. What I used to do, back and forth, go to this building, that building for a class.
Uh-huh.
So I knew that I had a young possibility of a clientele.
Right. Because you were the clientele.
Yeah. And I was able to, like, focus on this clientele and present to them what I thought they would like. And I did not, my partner and I did that. And in 5 years, we moved to 8th Street. When I moved to 8th Street, I said to my partner, Joanne, I don't know. This place is so big. And it was such a big jump.
Yeah. You had the downstairs, then you lived upstairs.
Yeah. And then I opened up the second floor.
Right.
Because it used to be an electronic shop, Hi-Fi or whatever. And they left and I took it. But really, I thought it was so big and it was a little scary. You know, after a year, it was like, we need more room.
That's such a good problem to have, right?
Wonderful problem to have. Yeah.
And so in the store, I remember you had great fashion, but you also had the beauty bar up front. Right? You had.
We developed the makeup bar, the makeup counter. It was like progressive. It progressed. But when I first opened the store, it didn't have the makeup.
Right.
Then I met somebody who was very good and adept at not only artistry, but product, because we're selling product.
Right.
And so she really established my makeup department, which was fantastic. And then one of the kids that worked for me went to beauty school on the side, and he loved wigs, and so I gave him a wig bar. You know, it developed, is what I'm saying, from within. But, you know, because I was interested in it, and I was positive about it, and, you know, I participated with the people, the kids that worked for me.
The kids that worked for you. Talk about the kids that worked for you, because this is a huge part of where you started with fashion.
Well, for me, it was basically, I want to be around interesting people because it's so many hours a day. I want the stimulation from artistic, intelligent people. And I love that.
Yes.
To me, like intellectual stimulation, artistic stimulation, it has a huge value to me. You know, the people that I would hire, I hired the people that I found interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Visually, things that they said. You know, these are young kids that come from all over the country or whatever.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's a little retail job. But the atmosphere was interesting and positive. And the kids liked being there as well as me. I liked being there. It was, the environment was, you know, rich. People say that, you know, I'm the mother of the drag queens or this or that. It wasn't about gay or homo or trannies or whatever. It was about, if you're interesting, I want to be around you. And a lot of the gay and this whole segment of our society, you know, they have to try harder.
Yes.
And so, you know, what you get is a different quality of a person. Not that I'm saying the other people are no good, but it's a different descriptive, let's say, of the person.
Right.
They're on their own.
Right. And they have to survive.
And they have to know what they're good at and work it.
Yeah. I saw recently a documentary about Christian Louboutin.
Oh, yeah. Actually,
that was good.
I heard just last night, David Dalrymple, who I don't know if you know or not, he's somebody who I've worked with for yes. all these years. And we happened to be talking about this whole documentary subject matter. And he brought up that Christian Louboutin thing. I hadn't seen it. I want to see it. And he said that it was interesting the way they structured it. Like yeah. he went to Tibet or someplace to get shoes made.
Yes.
But then throughout that structure, then he would do, like, talk straight to the camera about
yes.
something.
It was really good.
Yeah, I heard it was very
It was like
good.
A lot of back and forth, like, but you could follow it. So sometimes when you're watching these documentaries, you
they're
know.
They're boring.
They're boring. They bring you in the beginning. It's, like, exciting. I feel like there's some fashion. There's good music. There's, like, great. Yeah. Sort of scene. So,
but there's no
and he's
content.
An interesting person. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And I also, I mean, to me, I love the Valentino documentary, but I also heard that the Manolo Blahnik one was good.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that.
I've been busy. I miss a lot of things.
What
too
are you
much.
Busy doing these
what
days?
What am I busy doing? Whatever I do, I have this. My new thing was when I sold my store, I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? Okay, I could do a movie, a TV show. But when, so I kind of, at the time in my shop, I had a few artists that were painting clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And my clients would come and tell me, they loved the store. It was so interesting and things are one of a kind and they never know what to expect here. And the artist, the painted clothing, was doing very, very well. I said, well, maybe I'll make, I'll convert my regular website, which I had things for my shop,
mm-hmm.
and I'll convert it to what I called art fashion. And so...
Yes.
That was like, and still it's kind of my hobby.
Right. Well, I feel like even,
I'm doing it out of the interest and love. I'm not, you know, I'm not here to be whatever, some major gallerist.
Although, I mean, if you were, you just
it's
did
not
a,
my intent. It's just
it's
to enjoy
intention.
Myself.
Yes.
And, you know, do something that I'm interested in.
But you've
which,
always been
thank
interested
God,
in
I
art.
Do. Yeah.
I mean, didn't yeah, you have well, like the yeah. first Andy Warhols in your store?
Not Andy Warhol. Keith Haring.
Okay.
Jean-Michel Basquiat. Andy Warhol was like earlier. Of course, I mean, I knew him. I met him. But I had a very close relationship with Keith and Jean-Michel and a few other artists. And I used to have paintings and murals in my shop. They would come in and paint the walls and I would hang their paintings, and it was part of the texture of my shop. I said the art thing.
The dog is drinking the coffee.
The dog is drinking the
coffee.
She loves coffee.
By the way, there's a dog standing on yeah. the desk between Pat and I right now.
And her
which
name is Sultana.
Her name is Sultana, and she's a legendary princess poodle. And her sister is...
Her sister, Bhutana.
Bhutana.
Who is more the princess...
Oh,
this
really?
Is the Sultana is the adult in the room.
Oh, really?
Her name means sultaness.
Oh.
The wife of the sultan.
Got it.
Who was the king of the Ottoman Empire.
She drinks coffee.
She drinks coffee.
Nice.
American coffee. Italian
she
coffee.
She is literally.
She doesn't drink Turkish coffee.
I'm just taking
coffee.
A picture because this is like way too much. Oh, she's done. She's nuts. Strong, she doesn't perform on command.
If she would drink Turkish coffee, then I could turn the cup upside down and tell her her fortune.
Her fortune. Can you do that?
I learned it from my grandmother.
I'm sure. Your grandmother was Turkish or Greek?
No, but where my family came from was an island right off the coast of Turkey. Actually, where all of the Syrian refugees come by boat. It's the island of Lesbos, the island of Sappho. that island, you know, it's so close to Turkey.
Yes.
It, even the Greek that they speak, it has these like sort of Turkish ending sounds, and, you know, it's the mix of the cultures.
Right.
But it was Greece when the Ottoman Empire fell apart.
I feel like you, in my history, in my mental recollection, definitely know how to do all kinds of things that have nothing to do with fashion, from, you know, speeding up A1A at 100 miles an hour to get us to the airport.
Yeah.
Well, so you still have your Pacer, what car do you have now? You don't have the Pacer anymore.
I have a T-Bird.
But what has always been like
car.
Your sort of like, you've always had a thing with cars, right?
Yes, I do.
What's your thing?
My thing is I have to love my car. I don't just buy a car for some kind of convenience or, you know, practicality. I have to love my car. And that's why I keep my cars for a while because I love them. You know, and I can't replace them. I love them. So
what car do you have now?
Until they finally give it, I have a little T-Bird 2002, a sports model that was made for 5 years between 2000 and 2005. It's kind of like a little bit of a retro design,
mm-hmm.
kind of a cross between the old Lincoln Continental type of look, not so much the old T-Bird look. More like the Lincoln Continental look, more like, I love my car. It's sitting in the garage, very happy and warm in this snow.
I was going to say, where do you keep it? I know you drive
downstairs.
Do you still drive everywhere?
I use my car a lot. I drive, like a lot of my work, my film work and TV work is in Silver Cup Studios in mm-hmm. Long Island City. I drive over the Williamsburg Bridge and over there. I drive it at night too.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer drive midtown because it's so congested. It's easier to take a subway.
Yeah.
I don't even take a taxi because it's just such traffic and congestion going on right now in New York City.
And then do you still have a car in Florida too?
No. My car, I had a beautiful big convertible car in Florida, an Oldsmobile, early 70s. But it was just sitting there in the parking lot getting rusty and pieces were falling all over. I said, okay, I got to get rid of it.
And now you were just in Florida, right?
I was for Art Basel.
So what did you do at Art Basel?
I exhibited my art fashion. I represent about, I don't know, 10 artists.
Who are they?
Well, among them is Scooter LaForge, who is basically, he was one of the artists that was in my store
mm-hmm.
at the time. He's definitely built his name basically with his number one artistic talent, his originality, and his attitude is very good. It's like he wants his work around on mm-hmm. people, and that's what was happening in the store. And his prices were very affordable for young people who thought this stuff was cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they were wearing his T-shirts and his shirts and his jackets, and he was getting recognized. So he is one of my primer artists. Also, Jody Morlock, who used to work in my store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you know her, but you could check her out on my website.
I'm going to put this on the show notes. Mm-hmm. I'll list them all in the show notes for my website for
yeah.
the blog post.
Or, you know, they could list my website. They could
okay.
go take a
Perfect.
Look. And she is also from Florida. She grew up in Hialeah.
Uh-huh.
She came as like, I don't know, 18 years old, 19 years old. And she came and she worked in my store. That was in, I don't know when, the late 70s. She developed herself as a painter. But at the same time, her bread and butter is she does beauty grooming for before Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
The Daily Show, and then Jon Stewart left, and this Noah took over, and she stayed. So she, you know, her professional bread and butter life
mm-hmm.
is that she's, you know, in beauty grooming, and now she's got a new show on Comedy Central, but I don't remember the name of. The star of this show. So here it is, so whatever, I don't know, 40 years later.
Yeah.
And I call her up and I go, or I don't remember how it happened. She's like, I said, I'm going to do this art fashion thing. She says, I want to do it. I want you to be my Peggy Guggenheim. I'm like, okay, good. I'm glad you want me to do it. Come and let's do it. So, you know, it's a number of artists that have come to me through the past.
Uh-huh.
Like Suzanne Pitt,
mm-hmm.
whose raincoats I used to have in my store, painted raincoats. I don't know if you remember, but there were these big sculptures that looked like it was one of a guy smoking. But they were flat sculptures, like on plywood. And I kind of used them as room dividers because mm-hmm. they were big. And one that was like an ode to Lempicka.
Mm-hmm.
So I called her up. So I called a few from the past.
Uh-huh.
And then the new ones, like Scooter is, you know.
He's new.
Yeah, yeah. And others.
And so this was your second year doing your pop-up gallery at Art Basel?
At Art Basel, because we went last year. And it was good. And fortunately, I found the right location.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I put my name on the wall
mm-hmm.
because people know it. And
yes.
I'm here to promote the artists.
Right.
So let me tell people walking around, and there's a lot of people walking around, what's in this place?
What neighborhood is it in?
Wynwood.
Wynwood. Got it.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So do you think that's like the next frontier for you as a designer?
I don't know. It's about a frontier. As far as I'm concerned, after I started this, because as I say, I had the experience and I knew it. And when I was listening to my customers, my mind is clicking, saying it's back. The days of Keith Haring and so on. It's like Jean-Michel used to paint in my store sweatshirts that we used to sell for $18. It's insane. But anyway, the point was I lived through it the first time.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw it came around again, I jumped it.
Right.
And I started a trend because now wherever you go, Gucci's got painted clothes, Prada's got painted bags, everybody's painting like crazy.
Are you seeing it everywhere? Because usually you're so ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
in terms
I'm
of like
it everywhere.
Trends that.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know, that's the thing about trends. I mean, I don't really like trends
right.
because they have a short lifespan.
But you started.
Yeah,
some huge fashion trends when you worked on Sex and the City.
No, I started a lot of trends. Yeah. But they don't have a long lifespan. So when the lifespan is over, the trend is over, it's over.
Right.
And so, you know, once it reaches a saturation point where it's going to be in whatever, Zara painted clothing.
Right.
It's over.
Yeah. But so this is something that...
and then something else pops up.
But you're not someone who follows the trends. You're a pioneer.
So you're
a visionary. And it's not a trend when you think of it.
Because I do out of my own originality.
Right.
Out of my own brain. I don't go, oh, that's happening now.
Right.
I want to get on the bandwagon. You know, I'm one individual with my retail shop, a small retail shop. I mean, you know, it's a good size, but it's not, you know, a chain store, and I don't want it to be. So, you know, originality is what's the most important.
Right.
So whatever it is, if I'm doing costume design,
mm-hmm.
it's got to be what I believe in. And, of course, you know, there's an actor and there's a script, so it's important to combine them into something that makes sense to the audience.
Speaking of costume design, what's it like to be nominated for an Oscar as a costume designer and be in the company of some of your favorite costume designers?
Yeah, the nomination was a surprise, and it was very positive. I was very happy to get such a nomination. It was good. I mean, I didn't win, but I didn't expect to win because... the custom in the costume design world is that the Oscar always goes to either a historical movie or a costume movie. Like, I did win my first Emmy was a costume movie.
Right.
1989. Because, you know, that's, I don't know, that's what the convention is, let's say. So I was very happy to be nominated. But one of my most respected costume designers won. Her name is Melina Cannonero. She designed Marie Antoinette, and she did a gorgeous job. So, you know, I was totally satisfied with the fact she was sitting right behind me at the Oscars. And so, you know, I did not go in there expecting to win because I knew that contemporary doesn't make it. I mean, I'm not saying it's correct, but I mean, I mentioned Breakfast at Tiffany's. That should have won an Oscar back in the 60s when it was made. You know, it's still alive, and it's magnificent.
Yes.
And Edith Head was the designer. It's not the convention contemporary. So back in that day, that was contemporary. Today, it's a classic.
Right. What did you love most about what the costume designer did?
Oh, you mean Melina?
Yeah, talk about Melina.
You know, I don't know if you saw that movie, but she gave it a new breath of fresh air. She, in the colors and fabrics that she chose, they were much more, the colors were much more alive. Because in the Marie Antoinette days, if you do it literally, which you can, the colors were sort of pale. Not even want to say pastel, but they were sort of pale, like beige satins and not bright, the opposite of bright. And she injected color while keeping the silhouettes. And I think that it made the young generation understand more about Marie Antoinette because they were looking at something that they understood other than, you know, straight history.
Right. Sort of like Hamilton.
Yes. Hamilton is a great example of making a successful hybrid for the now people.
Right.
It was great. I loved that. That was the last great, other than Trinkets, because that was a whole different.
Right.
But I saw Hamilton when it was at the Joseph Papp before
right.
it went to Broadway. And that was the last big production that I saw that I loved.
Yeah, that was a great production.
Loved it.
Speaking of production.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I really
you know,
thought
making
it was
history like fun.
Yeah, and relatable.
Because I love history.
Yes.
And to see it presented that way, it was really wonderful.
Now, we are in your new apartment. I feel like your apartments are equally a reflection of your art, your design, and your style.
Absolutely. It's always an expression.
I mean, it's beautiful. So
of
did
what
you.
I feel.
Yeah.
But this is a totally different expression.
Yes.
You were in my Bowery space.
I've been in all of your apartments, as far as I know. I've been in your Miami apartment, which it definitely is beautiful. It's a lot like this apartment.
It is.
It's a
lot
like this.
It's the same size.
Yes.
There are certain design elements that it's not the same, but, you know, it's the same author.
And then I was in your 8th Street store, which when you talk about Breakfast at Tiffany's, I feel like I've been to a couple parties
My
there.
Loft on the top
yes.
floor. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was telling someone the other day about your old apartment on 8th Street because I was trying to explain, like, you know, there's so much to talk about, right? I mean, and for me, it's almost like I'm reminiscing, but at the same time, I mean, for me, it's like a huge part of my, like, young adulthood living in New York City, going to school here at Parsons and, you know, also, like, being part of that scene, like, I used to go to Mars and the Red Zone and the Palladium and all those places. And my parents had a store on 14th Street.
Right.
So for me, I like to now, looking
yeah,
at today,
up,
I don't go out
grew
anymore.
Up so New York City.
Yeah.
That's how I grew up, New York City.
So like going to your, I feel like I went to a party at your apartment and it really was like straight out of a scene from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
How so?
In the sense that everybody, like, it was just like this, like, fashion-centric room of artists and club kids and socialites for, I mean, maybe not socialites like Upper East Side, but it was socialites of like the social club scene in New York City.
Yeah.
And everybody was drinking and smoking and partying and like, you know, hanging out in what was your bedroom at the time to, it was part of the party. It was like, there was no like delineation of space. It was one big room. Yeah. And then downstairs was your store.
Exactly.
Do you have certain designers that you work with, or you just work with when you're designing your apartments and your spaces? Like, do you have a lot to do with the design?
I participate quite a bit. I have a friend whose work I really respect. His name is Benjamin Noriega. Actually, he helped me a great deal in designing the Bowery space.
Right.
Meaning the details, like how does this wall meet this wall? I mean, you know, but in addition to that skill and the fact that he could, anything that you say, he could draw it. And then in addition to that, one of the things that I just love about it, I always watch him drawing because it's amazing how he could just like write it, put it all down in a diagram. But the other thing that I love about him is like his aesthetics are, he has a sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
He has a lightness about him that I appreciate.
Right.
So, you know, we have sort of become friends. Actually, his boyfriend is, we represent his boyfriend who is a sculptor and does this jewelry. Not like typical jewelry, like out of denim and pearls and like neck pieces. Really beautiful. And so that is a long-lasting relationship. Actually, when I bought my place in Rockaway, I told them about it and they came and they liked it. So they bought a place.
That's
right,
so funny.
Down, you know, the next block over, right? So, you know, our relationship continued and still continues.
And so I feel like your apartments are somewhat of a combination of like a gallery with like really cool art, sculptures, some fun eccentric pieces that could be from a showroom.
Right. Actually, there are a few of those showroom pieces, mainly those mirror panels.
You've had that
they
for a long time.
They were a gift from Fendi.
Oh, no, those are different.
And I had them in the Bowery.
Okay.
I love them, and I took them with me here. They separated my bedroom from, you know, the living space. And but you nailed it, because that's Fendi. And then Roberto Cavalli, they were moving their showroom, and that's what was happening with Fendi. It was like, I know you love all, because I would go in there and say, oh, I love those Ottomans.
Right.
You know, they're Cobra. We're moving them. We don't need them. You want them? Take them.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, there is definitely that touch of from showrooms, but, you know, really special pieces.
Speaking of,
people were very generous to me and said, yeah, we don't need it anymore. Take it.
It's beautiful. Yeah. One of the things I love about all of your apartments that I think is a very central, it seems like it's a very central component, is your bedroom and your bathroom.
What
and
you,
how
all of them
together.
Yeah.
Like, so this leads me to my next topic, which is how much you love taking baths. And this is something about you that I don't know if everybody knows this.
You know what? I learned to take baths when I was in my early 30s, I think it was. I would just take showers. When I was in my early 30s, I was having back problems. I would like have no strength in my lower back. I couldn't so much as pick up this microphone.
Wow.
And I had a friend who was a doctor at the Rusk Institute, which is physical medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Physical medicine is an area of medicine that people, for example, who are in an accident or have strokes, they rebuild you. It's not medical. It's not medicine. It's not chemical.
Right.
They examine you and they see where your problem is, and then you strengthen through exercise that they designed for you. It was really good. And part of it was take a hot bath, because a hot bath, it relaxes your muscles and
right.
improves your circulation, as, you know. And so all of those are remedies.
Right.
And so I did it. And, you know, and they designed some exercises for me that I did. And after a few months, the problem was gone. I was like, and in the process, I learned to enjoy the bath. And in the process, I learned to understand to put oil in the bath and bath salts, you know, to make this bath, you know, it was something I learned as I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to this day, every morning I take a hot bath. Otherwise, you know, I feel like then I'm ready to go.
Right.
And also another great thing about the bath, if you put oils in the bath and salt, the oil for your skin is the best thing. So if you take a bath in oil every day, you know, 30 years later, you have good skin.
That's a good beauty secret.
Yes, it's a beauty secret. But I learned it. When I did it, I didn't know about this. I just did what they told me to do.
Right.
But then I, you know, after a while, I started to understand it and appreciate it.
And now it just really helps you relax.
I mean, look at my arms. Yes. They're good. Anybody my age, I'm 75.
Yeah. You have great skin.
Very nice skin.
Yeah.
That's the bath.
Yeah, I thought it was Greek.
So everybody get in that tub.
That's a good...
And relax. And if you like it in the evening, pour yourself a glass of wine. In the morning, I pour myself a cup of coffee. Enjoy the bath. You will be very happy in your life because of it.
And
whoever's listening to this.
Yeah. My mother. I'm kidding.
Your mom.
No. So, like, speaking of, like, you know, non-fashion related things, swimming. So did you, I feel like there has to be some segue between the baths and swimming, water.
Well, you know, I like to swim. The reason that I swim, or I know how to swim, my mother used to say this story, because we used to have a bungalow up in Connecticut off of a lake. And she tells the story that she turned around and I wasn't there anymore. And she ran into the water and she pulled me out. And after that, she was going to, because she swam. So she taught me how to swim when I was little.
Right.
And so I always knew how to swim. And I like to swim because I know how, and it's easy for me to swim because I've been, you know, swimming since I'm a kid. I kind of think of it as my exercise. If I'm going to do any exercise, it's going to be swimming.
And then do you now, I mean, you're so busy, do you get to swim very often?
Well, I start because there's a pool not far from where I live. And I started to go there on a regular basis. But then I don't remember what it was. I got really busy. I got too involved. And I didn't go. And then day after day, I didn't go. And I'm still in that condition, but I want to get back to it.
That's why I'm here.
Two blocks
from here. I'm dragging
you
back to the pool.
Yeah. You know, it's not like a fancy place. But, you know, it's an Olympic-sized pool. It's two blocks from here, and it's fine.
Do you feel like, I feel like you
it's
run
not
around a
country
a lot.
Club.
No. I don't really think that a
yeah,
lot of
Yeah, but
pools
you know how
there.
These yeah. places are.
Yeah. Well, my gym is, like, the closest, I think, to a country club in New York City. But it's still not a country club. Because it's, like, polar plunge every time I go to swim. Do you like the pool to be really cold?
No.
Warm.
I prefer, I don't like the shock of the cold.
No.
So I prefer it to be, you know, not freezing.
I feel like you're always on the move, like running around, like going to appointments, going to meetings, or being on a set. So that kind of feels like exercise in and of itself.
It is. That's why now, after I've sold my store, I continue to stay active in the film and TV area. Because I really, you know... It's so important that you stay active and you stay inspired and motivated. Otherwise, you kind of dry up. What am I going to do, sit here and do nothing? That would be impossible for me.
Right. Yeah.
So my art fashion, I continue to do, you know, costume work and TV. I have some possibilities of a documentary and a book, but it's not concrete yet.
Right. And you're moving away from concrete.
Exactly. I have, it has to be, whatever I do, I have to believe in it.
Right.
And so I have yet to find a project that makes complete sense to me, like as far as a book or a document, that expresses who I am. The problem is like that, you know, is that professional writers, professional movie producers, they're professional in what they do, but they don't know me.
Right.
And, you know, they go off on something that they think is me. And I'm like, no, that's not me. Forget it. Goodbye.
I feel like this has been going on for years, though.
Yeah, it's been going on.
There's a lot of people that have approached you, because even when we were talking a while back.
I don't want to be in that condition, but I'm not going to do something I don't believe in. It's not the way I operate.
You should do a book that is an amalgamation of everything you love. Like, not a book about you, but like art.
I need my friend Paul Alexander to write the documentary.
I'm sure
you know what I mean?
You were in touch with him.
He knows everything.
Right.
He was there. It's going to happen, I hope.
At some point, yeah.
At some point.
So you think you're going to do your pop-up next year again at Art Basel?
I hope so, yeah.
Would you do more art? Like, would you do something in New York, too?
Oh, yeah. We've done quite a bit, you know, actually. Well, I have a gallery studio right here on the Lower East Side on East Broadway that is brand new that I rented and I renovated. But the problem was the minute the reservation was over, which it was past the schedule, then came... in the summer, we went to Greece, to Mykonos, and we had an exhibition and fashion show in this resort.
Mm-hmm.
So then we came back, and so we took everything out of the gallery
mm-hmm.
before we moved in, and we moved out. And then after that came a similar situation up in the Catskills.
Okay.
Near Hudson.
Uh-huh.
At this beautiful garage that was renovated, big, huge one. And a friend of mine, Michelle Saunders, who lives up there, arranged it and participated in it. And I had a lot of support from the local people. It's kind of like the alternative to the Hamptons.
Yes, yes.
And then we finished that one and we went down to Miami for Art Basel.
Right.
So long story short, I want to make a party, you know, to welcome everybody into the gallery.
Uh-huh.
I could combine it with my birthday. We'll see.
You know, 6 weeks away, right? February 12th?
I know,
12th?
It's soon. How do you remember?
Because that's one thing I remember. I don't know. I just remember everyone's birthdays
that's
and signs.
Because cool, I don't.
Yeah.
But you remembered it.
I know you're an Aquarius.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
That's for sure.
This was awesome. I think, like, thank you so...
What are you, an Aries?
What, Sultana's in Aries?
I don't know. When is eight? They were born
April?
At the end of April.
Ooh, she could be a Taurus.
A Taurus.
Oh. End of April. She could be like April 25th, 26th. Let me see.
Yeah,
Sultana.
Somewhere in there. End of April.
Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, and more. Also, sign up for our newsletter. Just scroll down to the bottom of the site, to the bottom of the website, and hit sign up, because we are gearing up for some really big, exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in.